Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So, tonight, I thought we discuss talk about the five spiritual qualities, faculties, or it's called the indriyas, or it's called the five spiritual power. It's powers because these are the qualities that move your practice. These are the power. These are the qualities that strengthen. These are the qualities that gives oomph to the path of practice. Yeah, and they start out with saddha, which is translated as faith or confidence. So you have faith. The next qualities, the next spiritual power is when you have faith and confidence, virya arises, which is energy. Virya is energy arising. But it's the, and I'll go into details. And it's, but it's not the energy of doing, it's more of the energy of knowing, the energy of being. Once energy is aroused, mindfulness comes up after that. Once you have mindfulness, samadhi. So it's easy to be still. And once samadhi arises, wisdom. Yeah. So those are the five spiritual faculties that empowers your practice, that are in direct distinction to the five hindrances. When you have these five spiritual qualities which you develop, they help you overcome the five hindrances, the five obstacles to meditation. Yeah. And with anything, these qualities is something that you have to focus on, something you have to train the mind towards. It doesn't naturally appear in the mind. The thing that appears naturally, the thing that appears in the mind, the things that you don't have to do much, is greed, hatred, delusion, confusion, sloth and torpor. You get that for free. But you want faith, you want energy, you want mindfulness, stillness, and then you want the wisdom. Those are the things you have to focus on. Those are things you have to develop. Yeah? So what the Buddha left behind is always not just a philosophy, so much as a set of instructions for each and every one of us to put into practice. Yeah? Something that we have to strive for ourselves. And the first one, the most important one, they're all important, they come together. But the first one is important in the sense that if you don't have faith, nothing happens. You have faith or confidence, and faith and confidence in what? Faith and confidence in at least the Buddha. They were fully enlightened, they knew what he was talking about, and that he could use that knowledge and enlightenment, the wisdom, to teach others as well. Yeah? So it has a great implication. And also the thing that to understand and reflect on the Buddha was that he was a human being. He was not a son of a god, not a demigod, not a god himself, but he's a human being, just like each and every one of us. And he, through his own effort, purified his own mind, became fully enlightened. So that has great implication for each and every one of us, because luckily that's what we're at. We're humans. And through the trainings, we can do it. We also can arrive at this purity, arrive at this kind of deep knowledge and understanding. Yeah. So faith, first in the Buddha, also faith in the teaching, that when he became fully enlightened, he didn't was some kind of super duper guy that no one could duplicate. That the teachings he left behind, he taught that people who follow those teachings also become fully enlightened. Right? So something that each and every one of us can also take refuge in, can have faith in. And when you have faith, faith is not like a blind faith that, oh yeah, so-and-so told you the Buddha is enlightened, and then you believe or not believe. No, faith is like, it's more this quality of openness, of giving, the benefit of the doubt, of being able to receive things. And then your faith is like taking the teaching, applying it, and see if it works. And it works, and your faith increases. And then you start applying more. So as your practice deepens, you have tremendous faith in the Buddha's path. You have tremendous faith in the teaching of Ajahn Chah, Because when you put those into practice, they work. So sometimes I see that people come back from Thailand or Burma or something, and they say, oh no, you know, Buddhism in the East is just too much cultural baggage, too much hocus pocus. And for myself, you know, I don't see it as the kind of a criticism on the Buddhism up there, but I'm thinking these people, whoever come back, must not have such a deep practice, must not have realized much benefit from the practice. When you realize the benefit, it's just, you know, faith is a natural byproduct. Confidence is a natural byproduct of the teaching. Yeah, because when you, it's something you put into practice, and faith is, but it's also very fragile. Yeah, something that you can't force as well. Something that, you know, you have to develop gradually, and that comes together as the practice mature. And that's why in the sutra it says, you know, the stream enterer has unshakable faith in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. Because he's seen the teachings himself, he's seen the truth, he's seen the stages of enlightenment in himself. And so you know that they work. But until then, it's true, it takes a bit of openness, a bit of giving the benefit of doubt. And, you know, like a monk explained, faith is like a map. I use the simile, I should find a new one, but it's the simile over and over again. Faith is like a map that you look at. And this map that the Buddha, you know, left behind, it's very accurate. You know, describe where you live, you know, that street, you turn left, you see a river, you follow that, you say, oh, there's a river there. So you're like, okay, so you have like, okay, yeah, the map is good. You know, it's very accurate in the areas that you live. But then further down, it starts describing landscapes and things that you never seen before. Maybe it starts in a very, very, very tall mountains or deep oceans that you live in an area that had no ocean, you don't know what it's all about. But then you have faith because the area that he described where you live is very, very accurate. It's the same. So when you faith is in the beginning, is when, you know, the Buddha taught, be harmless, be virtuous, and it brings happiness, brings confidence. So you practice that, you keep the precept, you are harmless, you restrain the mind, and then there's an increased sense of happiness, increased sense of well-being. Then you realize, okay, yeah, okay, this path seems to work. There's some truth to this. Yeah, so then you start to have faith and you start to practice, you know, the teaching, what he laid down. But, and it's, you know, it's one of the meditation masters said, you know, faith is like when a teacher says, you know, jump. You don't say, why? You don't say, oh, you know, I have bad knees, you know, I can't jump. Just say, how high, right? You don't say, oh, you know, I need more sleep, otherwise I can't jump. Otherwise the doctor says I have bad knees, I really can't jump. You know, my jump might be bad for my knees. And a whole bunch of other reasons why you can't jump. But if you have faith, Jesus says, how high? And that's the thing that powers the practice. Otherwise, we live in a society that just overthink, overanalyze anything. And then sometimes that just, what do you call that? That's the freezes any kind of ability to do anything. You know, when the mind gets thinking too much, it's just, you can't find a reason to do anything. Anything you put forward, there's always a contra negative. Anything, you know, any practice, there's always something else. But with faith, you're willing to give it a try. You're willing to throw everything in there. You're willing to give your life. You're willing to focus on it for a long, long time before trying anything else. And that sometimes helps the practice because you're focused. Yeah, and with a lot of faith, in the beginning anyway, it also dispels a lot of doubts in the mind. Because there are many paths to practice. There are many ways to reach, you know, ultimate liberation. So it's like on the long journey, you know, there's many ways to the mountains. You can go left, go right, dig through the mountain, go straight up, go by land, by air, right? But with faith, you just pick one road and you stick to it. You're not interested in meeting other people, comparing notes, you know, which way is better, which way is more direct, which way is easy to get there. You just keep on going because you have faith in the teacher, you have faith in the teaching, you have faith in the tradition, and you just keep at it. So it's not about finding all the possible routes to the top. It's finding one route, sticking to it, and working it through. Yeah, and with faith, it focuses and narrows the option. But then as you practice, and you start to realize the fruits of the practice, as you experience the peace, the stillness, the sense of well-being in yourself, then you know that this path works. Yeah, regardless of what other people might say, whether it makes sense on a logical level, or maybe it fits all together, but it's kind of an emotional thing. That things are coming together. That your states of confusion, states of doubt, starts to clear up and then starts to disappear. And you feel it's just a sense of well-being, sense of contentment, a sense of, just stillness arising in the mind, where before there's a lot of movement, confusion, restlessness. So you realize, okay, yeah, this is the path that is yielding fruits. And you continue doing that. Yeah. So with faith, energy arises naturally. Yeah. You find that, you're happy to stay, wake up early in the morning, meditate late. This is a natural thing. You have a lot of faith, a lot of happiness. It comes up naturally. Yeah. But also, it's not the energy of restlessness, of kind of doing things. Not the energy of the body. It's more the energy of the mind. This energy of kind of knowing what's happening the present moment. And the energy of the virya energy is the energy of right effort. The energy of looking into the mind, knowing whether it's wholesome state or unwholesome. If it's unwholesome, you try to relinquish, let it go, and cultivate the wholesome state. You try to develop wholesome state to make it grow and maintain it for as long as you can. Yeah, so that's the energy of just constantly being aware of the mental states in the mind, constantly focusing on it, constantly doing different things to arouse wholesome states of mind and to try to decrease unwholesome states of mind. Yeah, so that's the energy, just looking inward, energy that's bright and clear. Yeah, when there's energy in the mind, you're naturally mindful. You don't have to try to be mindful, just aware. Whatever you see, hear, you remember, yeah, for a long time, yeah, it comes. And with mindfulness, yeah, and then so mindfulness is very, very strong. Mindfulness is not about kind of forcing the mind on an object, not about kind of, there are different ways to cultivate it, having a mantra or focus on or different things. But when there's an energy in the mind, it's bright and it's clear. Whatever you do it. With full mindfulness, 100%. Whatever you do well. Because you're just there, you're present, and you're aware and alert. Sometimes, when the mind doesn't have energy, you have this kind of negativity, not really caring what's happening, not really present. Yeah, so the mindfulness, is this kind of really caring. What's happening in the present moment? What's happening to the people around you? What's happening to the situation? And you're there. You're not up in some, fantasy land. You're not kind of have this kind of fog that you're kind of walking through because the energy is low. It's just bright. It's like shining super laser light at anything. You see it very, very clear. You see every single detail. It's like the back of the room with that door with the engraving. You shine a massive, 10,000 watt spotlight right back there. You see every single crack, every single mark on the door. And that's kind of the power of mindfulness, of strong energy. But normally, the light is dim. You can roughly see this door, and there's a bit of things back there. Not exactly what. And that sometimes most people go through life like that. It's like they see something. They don't exactly know exactly what's back there. They're confused with other things. And then we make a lot of problems for ourselves and others. You have a strong mindfulness. You see clearly. And it also brings a sense of caring. You care about what's happening. You're trying to, do things that are encouraging more harmony. You do things from wisdom and compassion, not from kind of irritation, not from self-center, not just aware of your wishes, but also aware of what the wishes of the people around you. Yeah, so that's the mindfulness, the care and attention. And it's focusing in the present moment. Yeah, you hear, whatever you see, you remember. Wherever you hear, remember clearly. Yeah? So that is the mindfulness that comes from an energized mind. Yeah. And with mindfulness, whatever you focus on, it stays. Yeah, so you look at the breath and the panasati, it stays all the way from the beginning to the end. Every single breath, over and over and over again. It doesn't veer off anywhere. Because this, with energy and clarity, there's a sense of contentment, sense of focus. But it's not forcing the mind. You're not like trying to meditate. It's just naturally. The mind is just happy, it's got energy, it just stays with it. Stays with the breath, stays with the body, or stays with whatever object you focus your mind on. Yeah, when you contemplate, it stays with the theme of contemplation. Yeah. So samadhi is the stillness, but the stillness, like I said, is stillness and power. Not stillness from lack of energy. It's not stillness because you're too tired to move. It's powerful, strong, but still. And that's a strange kind of paradox of a samadhi state. That you have lots of bliss, lots of happiness, but it's not restlessness. That it's completely still. The mind is bright, happy, completely still, not moving. Whereas, you know, in the normal state of energy, especially in the body, a sense of worry, like when you have a lot of energy, it starts to wrestle, you start to bounce around, you can't sit still, you're moving different bits and pieces. So that's the energy of the restless mind. The energy of a still mind is much more pleasant. Yeah, you can feel that you can sit still for hours and hours. And that's why when you go to, you know, deep meditation, absorption states, the mind is clear, it's happy, highly energized, but really, really still. You can sit for hours without having to move the body. When you get up, the body is fine. There's no aches and pains. Yeah, and that's just because the power of samadhi. It brings, you know, this kind of the paradox of great energy, but tremendous stillness as well. And with that stillness, it's easy to see, it's clearly to understand. Wisdom arises from samadhi, from a still mind, not from kind of a logical reasoning, not from working things out, but from seeing for yourself. But also the wisdom of, but you know, traditional people have the standard definition of samadhi in the sutta is the fourth jhana. But generally, in the Thai forest tradition, samadhi is it's just the any state of stillness in the mind, and it just goes deeper naturally. Yeah, sometimes a lot of times, you know, when I do teach, I don't give too much details on what the stages of samadhi are, because sometimes people read it and then, you know, it sticks in the mind. And when you sit to meditate, you bring these concepts, these ideas into your meditation. You're constantly comparing, analyzing, commenting, and that's not very peaceful. Yeah, it's just have faith. It's a natural process of the mind. When the mind becomes still, it opens up and it settles down on itself. And we interpret, we perceive the experience of stillness different ways anyway. So you can read somebody's, you know, description of their stillness experience. It can be very different from yours. And sometimes it leads to doubts and wondering, and, you know, is this the first jhana? Is this third jhana? Am I going the wrong way? And that's why I find that, you know, with all this so much information, the books about different samadhi states, it leads to a lot of confusion, especially if you read things across the different tradition, because everybody has their way of perceiving stillness. Yeah. But when you do experience stillness, you know for yourself, okay, yeah, this is stillness. Don't have to name it. It doesn't make it any more special. You can give it a name. It doesn't make, you know, and more clear. Just know that the mind is just inclined towards stillness, you know. And then, like I said, when you're not thinking, analyzing, the mind settles down by itself. When you're not disturbing it by wanting, pushing it along, managing, controlling it, it settles down. But sometimes in the beginning, you do have to kind of have trust and faith and allow, you know, like kind of let go of the control and allow the mind to settle down. Without too much thinking, wanting, craving, just sitting here, happy to be in the present moment, happy to be this body of mine, happy just to be here, and then waiting to see what happens. You're not reaching out, grabbing the breath, not reaching out, grabbing the body, not pushing things along to make it happen. It's the wanting to make things happen. It's the wanting the results. Any wanting, right? You're meditating long enough, you know there's called the walls of wanting. As soon as you want something, the walls come up, boom, 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 boom. And you never get there. Right? The more you want, the higher it is and the thicker it becomes. And all you need to do is just relax and just wait. And the wall starts to disappear by itself when the wanting goes down. Yeah, sometimes you feel, oh, you know, you're so far, the mind is so restless that you never get any peace. But then you suddenly click and you stop the chattering mind, and then, you know, things become very, very peaceful very quickly as well. And that's the wonder of kind of the mind. It moves very quickly, but also it can stop very quickly as well. Yeah, but sometimes when you read these texts, they get all these stages that you have to go through and this and that other stuff. And it implies that you have to kind of work through them. Not necessarily. It may go through the stage, but it can go through it very quickly when the mind, you know, settles down. And that's what I keep, you know, mentioning and very kind of clearly. It's the mind. It's not you doing it, right? It's something that's a natural process. As long as you kind of trust faith, be able to, you know, relax, be able to wait in the present moment. And then these things happen. That's the natural course of event. So something you can manufacture, so something you can push along. Which in Charles' kind of famous simile is that when you grow a plant or a tree, your job is just to water it, to tend it. But it's the tree's job to grow. And whether it blossoms and grows fast or slow, that's up to the tree. It's not up to you. The same with our practice of meditation. Our practice is, you know, to get our bum onto the cushion, to put in the time. But also, you know, whether the practice comes together, whether you have samadhi, that's up to the different conditions. That's up to, you know, that's not really up to you. So, you know, one teacher said, you know, you look after the practice. The Dhamma looks after itself. When the time comes, the Dhamma will start to blossom in your mind when the conditions are right. The wishing, the wanting, the rejecting, the goal setting only serves to kind of disturb the whole process, really. Yeah. So with the samadhi, it's just this kind of gentle waiting in the moment. No plans, no projections, no wishing, no longing, not even just a little bit. And when the mind becomes more still, you just have to have trust to let go. A lot of times it's this sense of self behind it. The reason we can't get into deep meditation because we have a sense of self. We don't want to let go of the body. We're attached to our thinking mind. We like to think. We like to analyze. We like to talk to ourselves. So until those, we can let go of those things, then the mind will have this kind of chattering. But once you see that clearly, it starts to fade away by itself. Through training, through just kind of waiting. And with a still mind, wisdom happens. Wisdom arises. But the Buddhist wisdom is not the wisdom of the worldly wisdom of solving, I don't know, world peace, of diplomacy, of thinking, of managing things. It could be. But no, wisdom in the Buddhist context is always very, very specific. It's wisdom into the Four Noble Truths, to understand what suffering is, to let that go. Yeah, so always understanding, what is it that causes, you know, discomfort, dis-ease? What is it that moves the mind? What is it that moves away from true happiness? When you understand suffering, you understand stress, the mind lets go automatically. Ajahn Chah says, you know, over and over again, we suffer because we don't see clearly. You see clearly, there's no problem. We always have problems in life, problems with relationship, problems with family, with work, neighbors, with each other. If you don't see clearly, if you see clearly, there's no problems. Yeah, so something, well, it's going to be good to reflect, you know, if there's an issue in life, something you're not happy about, you know, what is it we're not seeing? Sometimes we're just expecting too much from each other, from ourselves, expecting we all get along all the time. That's impossible. From time to time, there's always disagreements. There's always different ways of looking at things, a way of doing things. So yeah, to accept the present condition as it is. Not try to change it. Sometimes, yeah, you have your aspirations, you have goals. But you also have to understand that things don't happen the way you want them to. They happen, you know, according to causes and condition. People don't do what you want them to do. They do what they want to do, obviously. I think it's something we always remind ourselves in communal living. You know, yes, I know what I want. We all know what we want. But it's good to look around. Okay, there's about, you know, 5 other people in this monastery. They're just considering what they want as well. And to kind of learn to live, to negotiate the different, you know, ways to do things. And generally, luckily, you know, with the Dhamma, with the guidance of the Buddha and the meditation masters, you know, generally it's a great place to be. A lot of people have purity of intention. We have differences, but, you know, the purity of intention of training, wanting to live in, you know, harmony, well-wishing for each other, appreciating each other, looking at the positive quality of each other and not looking at negativity, does help, you know, community to run smoothly, to get along. And like we're saying, we were reading kind of, the reading this week was on gratitude. And it's a great kind of training. It's a great way to train the mind. Always looking for things that we already have, looking for things we can be grateful for instead of what things are missing in ourselves or the world or the monastery or in life in general. Because you look at the world, you know, it is what it is. It could be lots of confusion, lots of violence, lots of chaos. There's certainly that part of the world still there. But you look at that, it just confuses the mind, sometimes depresses you, you know, how much violence there is in the world, and that doesn't help. So when you do look at the world, you look at the way that inspires you, look at the way that lifts the mind. And that's through the lens of gratitude. And with gratitude comes contentment. You know, when you look for things that you already have, there's no need to change it. No need to improve, no need to look for something else. Yeah. Monastery is good enough. You don't have to change the monastery, you have to go to a different place. But you look and it's not good enough, then of course you have to go to another place, look for different places, different ways to practice. So with gratitude brings contentment, brings a sense of well-being. And as with anything, it is the training, the focus of the mind. It takes work. You have to initiate it, you have to maintain it, and you have to focus on it. But it's something that, you know, that's why we're here. Something worthwhile to train the mind, to brighten the mind, to bring happiness. And with the you know, the final factors, the spiritual quality, it is. In Buddhism, it's always, you know, regarding wisdom. And with wisdom, you know, with deep wisdom, compassion arises naturally. And that's kind of the nice byproduct. You know, with all the meditation masters I met, you can see this is a natural inclination of the mind. Once you solve your own issues, insecurities, your wanting, your worries, your anxieties, there's so much energy left. And that when that goes outward to the people around you, in terms of care and compassion. Yeah. But obviously, you know, it's something that happens naturally when the mind is clear and bright and content. It's not something, sometimes we want to be compassionate, sometimes we want to be loving, but if we have issues we haven't dealt with, then that's just not possible. You can't give something you don't have, right? And that's why, you know, the Buddha is always encouraging meditation, always encourage, you know, you want to be a source of goodness and benefit to the world, you know, start with this thing, start with this person. Clear up your worries, your issues, your anxieties. Train the mind. Make it still. And then, you know, as you clear up your stuff, you can see, you can appreciate, you can accept the world and the people around for what they are. They're having to change. And this amazing kind of acceptance that you can feel when you're around kind of a well-practiced monk. That constantly, it's always a sense of compassion, wanting to help people in different ways, wanting to kind of lift things up, wanting to be of service. And it's not from an idea of, oh yeah, you know, I'm a good monk, I should be this, I should be that. It's just a natural reaction. And it's instinctive and it's natural. And you can feel that, you know, so deeply with the well-practiced monks. And that's the benefit of, you know, cultivating wholesome qualities. That's the benefit of cultivating, you know, the five spiritual qualities. And like Buddha said, you know, it's these things lead to enlightenment. They're the antidote to the five hindrances that sometimes clear, you know, clouds the mind, obscures wisdom. So those are the qualities of faith, energy, mindfulness, stillness, wisdom. So may you cultivate these wonderful qualities for your welfare and happiness, and the welfare and happiness of all beings.
Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādhe. Vākācho bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namassaṃ. Sūpatipanno bhagavato sāvaka saṅgho saṅghaṃ namassaṃ.